This is where the DJ talks. Don't say anything.
Okay.
Each of these media creates a new environment. It creates a new situation for human association and human perception. Any medium at all creates a new pattern, a new atmosphere, a new environment of human perception, which works upon the whole man. It works upon the whole society. That is the effect of a medium. It has that total pervasive effect. That is the message, that social change that is brought about. The content of the medium is never the message, because the content is all to the old medium.
From the vast wilds of the Great White North, for the week of February the 6th, 2017, it's TVA, a Canadian perspective on television. From north and south of the 49th parallel, I'm Anthony Marco.
And I'm Greg David.
We would like you to put your television on mute for episode 221 of TVA, the podcast. Greg, I don't know what's going to happen when we get to 222. It's like room 222. We might have to play the theme from room 222.
Oh, we could do that.
Yeah. Yeah, that might be some kind of thing. I don't know. It's a palindrome. It's a triple trifecta kind of thing. Is it more special than the 200th episode? I'm not even sure. It just seems to be special. That's all.
It's always special when the three numbers line up. You always see that on Facebook too, right? Like people post the date and they're like, "Ooh, look at that." It's like, "Yeah, okay, let's move on."
Yeah, like when you got that date, yeah, when it's the same forward as backwards, yeah. The palindrome and all that. Yeah, all that stuff. Maybe we'll do something. Then on the other hand, maybe that smacks of too much work, and we'll
probably forget.
Yes, exactly. Folks, we have I would say a rather sparse calendar to talk to you about, and a couple of other things. But one of the big things that we have, which we're going to talk about a bit later in the episode, is if you remember a couple of weeks ago, as we recorded, we had the nominees come out for the Screeny Candy something awards, whatever.
Yes.
And we talked a bit about the nominations for like best shows and best this, but we didn't get into a lot of the acting and writing categories. So we're going to get into some of those later in the episode.
Yes, get comfy. There's about 300 categories that we still exactly. need to cover.
Well, we'll start off probably pretty in depth and then start to gloss over them pretty quickly.
Skim.
Not saying that we're trying to dismiss anybody. I just, you know, it's just one of those things where you keep talking about it long enough and all of a sudden your eyes gloss over.
We're on a schedule. We got exactly. stuff to do.
Exactly. People to see, people to go, places to see,
that's
something
right.
like that.
Yep.
Before we get there, however, it is time for the beverage update. And Greg, I over the past week have been quite lucky in my bourbon acquisitions.
Okay.
I'll certainly let you go first. Even though I haven't opened the one bourbon, I'll tell you about the one bourbon because it might be for a future episode. I'm kind of teasing what might be a future episode.
Well, why don't you go first? I always go first, so why don't you first today?
Okay. So through the local constabulatory and their liquor offering systems, I managed to secure myself a bottle of Old Rip Van Winkle 10-year bourbon, which isn't like the super high end of anything, but I mean, it's a bottle that's it costs about $100 Canadian. The problem is you can't get it.
Okay.
Like they release very few of them every year, and you have to literally go into a lottery system through the LCBO to even try to get a bottle.
This is the 10 or the 12 year?
This is the 10 year.
Okay.
So there's a website that I often go to called the Bottle Blue Book. And it tells you what the secondary market price is for a lot of these bourbons, because there's a huge secondary market for bourbons. And like the Pappy Van Winkle 23-year goes for like $3,000 to $4,000 a bottle. It's insane. But the 10-year one costs about $100 Canadian, and it's currently selling at about $350 to $375 US.
Oh my goodness!
So it's not a bad pickup. Considering the LCBO doesn't gouge you and charge you the secondary market price because they're, you know, a government licensed institution, and it would be difficult if they tried to justify, you know, charging you what the secondary market was. So I did get that. I'm not cracking it open yet. What I did, however, manage to score, and this is fairly rare, it's not as easy to find out there, is Booker's, which is kind of one of the more top ends of the Jim Beam family. And so I do have some tasting and nose notes as well.
Okay.
Not just tasting notes, but nose notes.
Great.
So I'm going to try to channel my inner Sam Elliott here and see what I can do with this. This is a great classic bourbon nose. Caramel, vanilla, oak, and that wonderful bourbon spice. The rye comes through in a big way, along with notes of pepper, cinnamon, mint, and cloves. Adding water enhances the vanilla and caramel while bringing out some of the great dark fruit notes. Caramel and vanilla with the oak coming in is quite muted on the palate. Salty butterscotch, bruleed pastry, rye, pepper, leather, and a cooling mint, and dark fruit leather round out this complex and amazing flavor profile. A splash of water here tames the alcohol, and some fantastic buttery notes, along with a bit more of the oak.
Wow. Fruit leather. Is that like those fruit roll-ups?
Dark fruit leather.
Mmm.
All I know is that may become the show title.
Now is this the Booker's Kentucky Straight Bourbon?
This is the, yes, so this is the Booker's Small Batch.
Okay. Oh, Small Batch, okay, because I'm on the LCBO website, and I'm looking at the bottle here.
That could be it. So the one with the kind of tan bottle, it kind of looks rustic, yeah.
Yeah, yeah, nice.
Yeah.
All right.
So and the nice thing is, it's usually straight out of the barrel, so it's a cask strength bourbon, which means they don't water it down.
Okay.
So they basically say, oh, look, here's this barrel. This is currently at a, you know, whatever it might be, in 110 proof.
Right.
You know, which could be 55%. Usually it's even higher than that, you know.
Yeah, and you wouldn't put any water in this because you're supposed to tame it yourself with your own damn water.
You can, you know what? A lot of people will put a drop of water in, like literally a drop or two. They'll get an eyedropper and put a drop or two.
Really?
Yeah. Because
do you have an eyedropper?
I do not have an eyedropper. Okay. I would tend to drink this straight.
Okay.
But when you put a drop of water to you, sometimes it really opens up the flavors.
Well, apparently.
Yes.
Sam told us.
Yes, he did. So there you go. So so Booker's Small Batch. So so what do you have on the go on this fair afternoon as we're recording?
Well, I have I got a bunch of bottles from at Christmas time. I got a bunch of bottles of beer from this brewing company in Brantford, which is my hometown, called Bell City Brewing Company. And the bottle that I've got today, it's called Breakfast with Tiffany. And
wow.
Yes. So here's the description that they've got. I won't bother doing a Sam Elliott voice because I won't be able to do it. It's Captain Crunch Amber Oat Ale. The Captain Crunch is evident throughout this three malt, three hop ale, mildly sweet and bready to taste. The creaminess won't cut up the roof of your mouth, and the aroma brings you back to eating cereal in front of Saturday morning cartoons. It's beer-orific. And it's 4.3%, and when you smell it, you can smell the hint of Captain Crunch cereal, but you can't taste it in the beer. I was wondering whether it would, you know, taste of that. And it says on the bottle, this amber ale combines 57 boxes of Captain Crunch breakfast cereal with three different types of specialty malt and a blend of three hops.
Is it just me or are craft beers getting a bit cutesy?
I think they are getting a little bit cutesy.
Now, don't get me wrong. After the soliloquy that I just read out about the bourbon that I'm drinking, I mean, you can't complain because bourbon has its own.
Sure.
Right? I mean, it doesn't go cutesy. It tries to go gourmet, you know? It tries to, it's like, ooh, you know? It's trying to be what the wine people used to have as their exclusive domain.
Yeah. At this point, everybody's just looking for an angle, and they're looking for something unique, and so that's the angle of this Breakfast with Tiffany. Now, I do have to say, the bottle is, it's 650 milliliters, so it's a little bit bigger than the usual bottle. So we'll see how I'm doing by the end of this.
Yeah. Well, we'll see if they come up with their Crunchberry Ale next year.
Yeah, Booberry or Frankenberry.
Peanut Butter Crunch.
Mm.
There you go. So with all of that, before we get to the awards and a couple of the other things we're going to talk about, it is time to open up the calendar. Perfect. So not a lot to mention on the calendar for the upcoming couple of weeks. What we do have to mention, we mentioned very briefly at the end of our last calendar input, just in case to let you get ready. On Wednesday, Hard Rock Medical returns to APTN. Now, this would be a good opportunity to talk about an announcement that was made here in Ontario earlier this week, which is that TV Ontario is planning on cutting their over-the-air broadcasting.
Yes.
So people normally would be getting Hard Rock Medical. It's a production of TV Ontario, which is Ontario's public broadcaster, where the CBC is the national public broadcaster. TV Ontario is the provincial public broadcaster. And it is, you know, considering Ontario is a large populous province, it is a pretty well-funded organization.
Yes.
But one of the things that you would expect, in the same way that CBC is still pretty much ensuring that you can pick it up via an aerial almost anywhere you are close to where they have a station in the country, the fact that TV Ontario kind of made this threat that they were pulling from the over the air airwaves, I found a little bit insidious. And I don't know if it's just a ploy to intentionally piss people off to make sure they get their budget request, because it seemed like it was meant to be a little bit incendiary.
Yeah, well, and it certainly got you riled up, and for good reason, because outside of Toronto, you're not going to be able to watch TVO. So, you know, you're in Hamilton, so that means you're out of luck. It's very, very strange that this is suddenly popping up. And I do feel as though maybe there's a little bit something more behind it, that maybe, you know, they're looking for some more money or something like that. Because there's got to be too much outcry for this. Now, this is over the air. So, you know, if you have a cable package, it means that you'll still get TVO. But if you've got an aerial strapped to the house, which it seems like more and more people are doing, right? Yes. They're looking for they're grabbing the over-the-air signal. So it'll be interesting to see what happens with this. And this is also
They said that the savings is only $1 million.
$1 million.
Only $1 million. Yeah. But still.
Yeah.
TVO has a half-decent budget.
They do. It also means that there will be 8 jobs eliminated, and it means that the 8 over-the-air transmitters will be shut down. And, it, you know, it's interesting that this is coming up, because it was just a couple of weeks ago, I think it was, that Bell Media announced that they were going to be shutting down a couple of local transmitters, I think in the Ottawa area or maybe up near Wyarton. So we're losing more and more of these transmitters, which means, of course, if you want these channels in your area, you know what that means. It means you've got to at least order skinny basic cable for your house to get these channels. So definitely feels like there's something behind it.
Like, as a taxpayer, if I'm paying to fund TV Ontario, I should be able to access it.
Exactly.
That's what it comes down to. So unless you're going to provide me free broadband internet,
mm-hmm.
if the government wants to take that money and provide all Ontarians with free broadband internet, then I can support this, because I can say, you know what, instead of buying a TV now, go buy yourself a Chromebook, which is cheaper than a TV, and you can sit there and you can watch to your heart's content.
The only other solution is get Steve Paikin and Pokeroo to come to your house.
Yes. Well, you could do that. Pokeroo! But Hard Rock Medical, as at the beginning of our segue.
Yes.
Hard Rock Medical, which originally came onto TVO, and you can find all the episodes on the website, makes its second viewing return over to APTN Wednesday.
That's right. And, you know, just thinking about that, we can get all the episodes of Hard Rock Medical on TVO now. Steve Paikin's nightly news show, they just started streaming it on Facebook last week. So I wonder if this is, you know, paired with this whole transmitter shutdown in Ontario, I wonder if this is a move that, you know, TVO is thinking about going on, you know, increasing their online presence for streaming programming to those folks that don't live in the Toronto area.
Maybe.
Yeah, we'll see.
It's one of those things that ticks me off. Oh, yeah. I like the fact that TVO, for the most part, like I had a couple people who jumped on and said, well, why doesn't TVO do what PBS does and like do fundraising drives? It's like, I don't want them to.
No, that's right.
Yeah. I don't want them to like show me 3/4 of a show and then all of a sudden it's like, and before we show you the last part of this show.
3 people on the phone behind them and they're just sitting there.
Let's tell you how you can get this great tote bag.
Yes.
We jump from this Wednesday to next Sunday, February 12th, and we have the return of Mighty Cruise Ships on Discovery.
You know, this Exploration Production Incorporated, which is Discovery Canada's in-house production company, they're the folks that do all of these mighty ships, mighty cruise ships, mighty trucks. Anything to do with the Mighty series is done in-house here in Toronto.
The mighty, mighty boss tones.
Exactly. Exactly. I'm waiting for the follow-up, the second season. I don't think we're going to get one. And these shows, the ratings go through the roof for these programs. I think they're also the same people behind Mayday. But yeah, Mighty Cruise Ships, second season, Sundays at 7, beginning February the 12th. Again, they go behind the scenes to take viewers at some of the world's most extraordinary hotspots and behind the scenes of these seafaring marvels. So the first episode is Carnival Vista, which is a new flagship for one of the world's largest cruise lines. It can carry more than 4,600 passengers. It boasts 10 restaurants, nearly 2,000 staterooms, and a crew of 1,400 ready to tend to their guests' every need. That's crazy. 4,600 people all together on the same ship?
Well, that's why whenever they have, you know, something... Like, remember there was a cruise ship a couple years ago where I think it was... The engines went and the sanitation started not working.
Yeah.
And there was, right, like when that happens now and there's 4,000 people involved.
Yeah, that's not good.
That's kind of a big thing.
Yeah. That is a big thing. Yeah. Second episode is the Royal Clipper, the largest sailing cruise ship in the world. Viking Sea is the second ocean going vessel on Viking River cruises. And it just kind of goes on from there. So if you go to the website, I've got the first few episodes are listed.
Is the Pacific Princess there?
I don't see... No, the Pacific Princess isn't there. No,
that's
gopher.
Yeah. So also coming up on Friday, the 17th, the debut, depending on which way you wish to emphasize the syllables.
Yes.
True North Calling on CBC.
Yeah, CBC documentary series. It follows the lives of six resourceful Canadians living across the far north as they share what it takes to survive and thrive in Canada's toughest terrain. So they go to Iqaluit, they go to Whitehorse, and spotlight people, farmers in the area, tour operators, fishermen, and television producers. I like this kind of stuff. I like documentary series anyway. And then when you pair it with the North where it gets very, very cold or, you know, black flies and mosquitoes and that type of thing, I'm all in for those hardy folks and their lives. So I'm going to be definitely tuning in to check this out.
Right. It's one of those, the only thing that I don't like is when they try and play up the danger survival aspect of it with a camera crew standing around.
Yeah. I don't think that's what this is. I think
to me it's more like a you know, here's a job that is dangerous just out of the fact that it's so far north.
Yeah. I mean, yeah, you're already a step above most people. The fact that you've gone north of Cochrane to do anything.
Is that going to be your one act play that you're writing?
Probably.
North of Cochrane.
I think so.
And we probably should mention it because by the time we record again, it will be the night of this. So, I mean, it's kind of a sneak peek ahead to the 20th of February where we have the Bellevue coming back on CBC.
Bellevue, this is a debut.
That's true. The debut.
Yes.
Sorry. Debut of Bellevue.
The debut. Anna Paquin, Sean Doyle. She plays a cop with a storied past, a tragic past, who is investigating the case of a missing transgender teen in the small town of Bellevue. Sean Doyle plays her boss, her superior, and they've been friends for a long time. And it's all about transgender and figuring out who you are as a person in a small town. It also questions religion in a small town. And they filmed this they spent a week doing outdoor stuff in Thetford Mines, which is an old asbestos mining town outside of a couple hundred kilometers outside of Montreal. So I've seen the first episode, and just they've got these blackened, brooding hills over everything that reminds me a lot of Sudbury.
Wow.
just because of because of the scarred hills, I mean. Remember
the
hills?
They're currently putting a picture of you on the Welcome to Sudbury sign and saying, not welcome. David.
Yeah, that's right. A very atmospheric, creepy, there's a murder mystery, there are, you know, mysterious riddles coming into Annie from a strange, she's not sure who's sending these riddles, and they've got six or eight episodes to figure it all out.
Well, if I had to guess who was sending the riddles, it would be Professor X sending them to Rogue.
I don't know what that means. What is that?
I don't know.
Is that from Rogue One?
No, didn't she play Rogue in the X-Men?
Oh, right. I forgot all about, yes.
Mm-hmm. or something like that, or one of the characters. I could be totally missing my geek cred.
Yeah, someone's gonna tweet at us and correct us.
I believe she did. She played one of the X-Men in the early movies. If I'm not mistaken.
I think you're right. In the first one, second one, okay, yeah,
something like that. Also that night, Anne of Green Gables, The Good Stars on YTV.
Yeah, this is the second Anne of Green Gables for YTV with Martin Sheen.
Yes,
in it. Can't really say much more than that. There is, if I'm remembering correctly, the big turning point comes in the third movie that'll be coming out later this year. I have not seen the screener for this one yet, so I can't tell you any more than that, except that
Are you embargoed, Greg?
No, I'm not embargoed. I just plain don't know. I just plain don't know. This is the Anne of Green Gables that Ellen Montgomery's family is behind and are executive producers on, as opposed to CBC's version, which I will be going to the set of on this week to interview the cast of that one. So we've got dueling Anne of Green Gables projects on the go.
Wow, there you go. And that's it. That wraps up our calendar. There we go. You do have a poll on the website right now, and it's garnering some interest. Although, strangely enough, Lost Girl's not on there. I noticed that.
Yes, Lost Girl is not on this one. Murdoch Mysteries is not on this one. And that's because this poll is, what is your favorite new Canadian series of mid-season so far? So I just decided that I would post the eight most recent shows that have debuted at mid-season and see what kind of where the temperature of the country is. So as of right now, I put the poll up, I think it was Thursday or Friday, and right now Mary Kills People, the global drama, is in first place with 41% of the vote. Pure, CBC's Mennonite Mafia series, is in second with 34% of the vote. Cardinal, which is the Giles Blunt adaptation with Billy Campbell in it, is in third place with 18%. Mm-hmm. Heavy Rescue 401, which is the Highway Through Hell folks, 15% of the vote. And then Working Moms, Ransom, Urban Vegetarian, and Chopped Canada Teen round out the top eight.
I'm surprised Working Moms, for all the hype that it got back at the beginning of the season, doesn't seem to be... Well, I mean, don't get me wrong, this poll isn't the be-all, end-all of saying, you know, whether it's people's favorites or not, but it's an indicator usually of whether it's got at least an element of popularity. I don't know what the ratings are. I haven't seen any ratings for it so far.
Yeah, no, you're right. This poll is just for fun. You know, everyone, as it is when polls get in there, when you post a poll, people kind of hop in, and there are ways of skewing those numbers. So I'm not sure if, you know, 1,684 actual humans voted for Mary Kills People. This was just, you know.
You're saying they were ghosts, Greg? Is that what you're telling us?
Yeah, there's ghosts. That's what it is. That's what it is. You know, but I can tell you that the ratings for Working Moms have been very good. They have been right around the million mark when you factor in the PVR numbers. So CBC has not made anything official yet, but they will be letting us know in the next couple of weeks the rest of the shows that are going to be coming back for the 2017-18 season. And I'm pretty confident that Working Moms is going to be on the schedule.
No, that's good.
Yeah.
Because, I mean, I saw that number there, and I mean, like we say, it's not indicative of anything in particular other than just the people who actually go to the website.
But yeah.
It surprised me that it was that low, to be honest with
you. Yeah, I was expecting the Working Moms, the folks behind the Working Moms website to promote this a little bit more, but that's all right. I don't take it personally.
Oh, yeah. Maybe someone needs to be doing a bit more promotion there. That's all we're saying.
Hey, I can only post the link on their website so many times, or on their Facebook page so many times.
Exactly. Promotion, that's the name of the game, folks.
Yeah.
See, that's a new game show we should put out. Promotion.
It's the name of the game.
Yes, exactly. It is that time, folks. It's time to do the deep dive.
Yeah.
Time to go into and pick up on some of the creative categories for some of the television shows. Now, we're starting on page 36 of a 54-page document.
Crazy.
So we're not going to get through everything. I'm going to go through... Here's what I'm going to do. I'm going to rifle through some of these really quickly. If you just say yep, then we're going to go forward.
Okay.
And if you wish to comment on any of these, we can comment.
Sure.
On them. Or if you want to just say this should win, then we'll go by there.
Okay.
Best writing in a children's youth program or series, Androids, with the name Ann. Bruno and Boots go jump in the pool. Degrassi next class. Odds and Odd Squad. And sorry, and the Stanley dynamic.
Yeah, that's a probably going to be Degrassi, but Bruno and Boots might squeak it out.
There you go. Best writing in a comedy program or series.
Oh, wait. Now, before you go on, let's just do a quick shout-out for Bruno and Boots Go Jump in the Pool, because friend of the website, friend of the podcast, Adam Barkin is nominated for a Bruno and Boots. So go, Adam.
There you go. Go, Adam. Wait, that could be a new show on YTV next
go,
year.
Go, Adam! Exclamation point.
Exactly. Actually, it would be go exclamation point after the go as well, I think.
Go, comma, Adam.
Best writing in a comedy program or series. This will be a big one, folks. Kim's Convenience. Yes, that's right. Two different episodes. Kim's Convenience for Dadong Chim and Kim's Convenience for Gay Discount. Letter Kenny for Super Soft Birthday. Mohawk Girls for Going Native. And What Would Sal Do for Punch's Pilot.
I have to say my personal favorite is Letterkenny's Super Soft Birthday. That was the second episode of season one, and it was hilarious. Okay.
There you go. Best writing in a documentary program or series. Hip Hop Evolution, How to Change the World, Rock Icons, The War at Home, The Woman Who Joined the Taliban. These are all from either HBO Canada or CBC.
Yes. Yeah, the only one I've seen is Rock Icons, Geddy Lee, Banger Films on HBO Canada.
Right.
And it was very good.
Yep. So, and two of them from Banger Films, actually, as well as Hip Hop Evolution. So.
Yeah, yeah.
Best writing in a dramatic program or a limited series. Again, these are episodic, like episode awards. So L.M. Montgomery's Anne of Green Gables on YTV, Murdoch Mysteries, A Merry Murdoch Christmas, Signed, Sealed, Delivered from Paris with Love, Slasher, and Swept Under. So I guess a limited series would count in here as well.
Yeah, yeah. So in the case of Murdoch Mysteries, it was the one-off Christmas special. In the case of Slasher, it was you know, a limited run number of episodes.
Yes, and past podcast guest Peter Mitchell is nominated for the Murdoch Mysteries Award. Yes. Best writing in a dramatic series, 19-2 for the episode Water, Orphan Black for The Collapse of Nature, Orphan Black for The Stigmata of Process, Orphan Black for Transgressive Border Crossing, and Winona Earp for Purgatory.
Yeah, with three of the nominations in that category, it'll be shocking if anything other than Orphan Black wins. The pleasant surprise in here is Winona Earp, the pilot episode, which is Purgatory. And Emily Andrus has said on Twitter that she was shocked, but says herself that the first episode of Winona Earp, she didn't think it was all that good. But I actually really liked it, so I'm thrilled that the show itself is nominated and for this episode, because I liked it.
Woohoo, CHCH.
CHCH. Winona Earp will be back on CHCH for season two.
There you go. Best writing in a factual program or series. And I had my issues with that last week.
Mm.
Highway Through Hell, Mayday, Polar Bear Town, Real Detective, and Still Standing.
Yes.
There we go. Best writing in a lifestyle or reality competition program or series. The Amazing Race Canada, Canada's Worst Driver, Food Factory, Master Chef Canada, and Survivor Man. I didn't know Survivor Man was back.
Yeah, it is. They did a series of specials for Survivor Man on OLN. But basically, the writing for this is you're writing what the narrator is saying, right? And what the host is saying for these series.
That first series of Survivor Man that came out, like, what, 8, 9 years ago now? Maybe 10?
Yeah.
I enjoyed that. I watched some of those several times.
Oh, yeah, me too. It's kind of a standard for me. It tends to be on early in the morning on the weekends or late at night, and I'll definitely tune in and watch it, even if I've seen it before. He did a couple of episodes of Bigfoot special, which was really good. No, he didn't find Bigfoot. But there was some weird stuff in the woods that was around him.
It was like a Bigfoot on Oak Island or something like that?
Yeah. Yeah, he's looking for gold.
Best writing in a variety or sketch comedy program or series. Baroness von Sketch, The Beaverton, This Hour Has 22 Minutes, Rick Mercer Report, and Sunnyside.
All good. You know, a very strong category, and no real surprise, because we here in Canada, we do sketch and variety very, very well. So I would be happy with any of these shows taking it.
Yep. Best writing in an animated program or series. A couple of episodes of Fangbone nominated, Knuckleheads, Nerds and Monsters, and Total Drama presents The Redonkulous Race.
Ooh, okay. Glad to see they got nominated.
Exactly.
I don't know what that is.
We're going on to performance categories now. So let's see. Oh, there's some of these I'm going to skim over. No offense to anybody, but you know, as we get down to let's see, I'm gonna skip past the news categories because I don't think tons of people are worried too much about news right now, to be honest with you. Okay, so let's see. Best performance by an actor in a continuing leading comedic role. We have Paul Sun-Hyung Lee for Kim's Convenience, Jared Kiso for Letterkenny, Jerry D for Mr. D, Daniel Levy for Schitt's Creek, and Eugene Levy for Schitt's Creek.
Yeah, great category. Thrilled to see that Paul Sun-Hyung Lee is nominated for Kim's Convenience. Yeah, that's a tough one to pick. My heart's going with Jared Kiso, but I would be happy. I would be happy with anybody else winning. I feel like Schitt's Creek is probably going to split the voting. Let's go on to the next one.
All right. Best performance by an actor in a continuing leading dramatic role. Adrian Holmes, 19-2. Eric Schwieg. I'm hoping it's Schwieg and not Schweig. For Blackstone. Landon LeBoiron.
Yeah, I think that's right.
For Frontier. Jason Momoa for Frontier. And Louis Ferreira for Motive, if not Louis.
Yeah, it's Louis. This will be the last year, I believe, that Blackstone will be nominated for anything, and I would be thrilled if Eric won, just because he was so great as the lead character on Blackstone. Adrian Holmes, that would be great, too, because Jared Kiso, and rightly so, Jared Kiso gets a lot of headlines because of his involvement with 19-2 and with Letterkenny, but Adrian Holmes kind of quietly has been putting in some great performances on 19-2, so I'd be happy if he got it.
By the way, some of these names I'm going to be ad-hocking on the way, so if I screw them up, I apologize to everybody in advance. Best performance by an actor in a featured supporting role in a dramatic program or series. Dan Petronievic for 19-2, Simu Liu for Blood and Water, Kevin Hanchard for Orphan Black, Evan Williams for Versailles, and Torben Liebricht for X Company.
Torben Liebricht, it would be great if he won. He won the Canadian Screen Award in this category last year, and he's just as good in... And then he won that for season one of X Company, and I would love it if he took it again for season two of X Company, because he's just been fantastic.
Actor in a supporting role or guest role in a comedic series, Andrew Fung for Kim's Convenience, Nathan Dales for Letterkenny, Jonathan Torrance for Mr. D, John Hemphill for Schitt's Creek, and Ryan McDonald for What Would Sal Do?
Perfect. Good one.
You like that one, eh?
Yeah, that's a good one.
Actor in a leading role or dramatic role or limited... leading role in a dramatic program or limited series... Evan Bouliung for Adventures of Pericles, Jarrett Wynn Davies for Hamlet, Steve Byers for Slasher, and Ben Carlson for Taming of the Shrew.
Now, that it's interesting for Hamlet and Taming of the Shrew, because this is CBC's deal with the folks at Stratford.
Yes.
So these are the broadcasts of the plays. So interesting to see that. And I'm guessing it's the same with the Adventures of Pericles as well. So the only one in there that isn't a play is Slasher.
Yeah. I like the fact that they're doing that.
Me too.
Because, I mean, they do such incredible work at Stratford. And if it's a little gateway to get people to actually go down there once a year, I mean, it's probably worth it right there.
I totally agree. And for those folks that are never going to get the chance to come to Stratford, it gives them a little peek into what goes on there. Yep.
Actress in a continuing leading comedic role, Andrea Bang for Kim's Convenience, Jean Yoon for Kim's Convenience, Kim Cattrall for Sensitive Skin, Catherine O'Hara, Schitt's Creek, and Jennifer Dale, What Would Sal Do?
I do have to say that Jennifer Dale is great in What Would Sal Do? Her character is so unlike the characters that she has played in the past. Any one of these ladies is worthy of getting the award, and of course with Kim's Convenience being the new guys on the block, it'd be cool if one of them won as well.
This is a tough one coming up here, I'm telling you. Actress in a continuing leading dramatic role. Carmen Moore in Blackstone, Kristen Lehman in Motive, Tatiana Maslany, Orphan Black, Megan Follows in Rain, and Erica Durance in Saving Hope.
You're absolutely right. This is very strong. Carmen Moore, you spoke to her
yes.
During Blackstone. Yeah,
well, we've spoken with Carmen Moore. We've spoken with Erica Durance as well on the podcast.
Oh, yeah, that's true. Yeah, absolutely. So now we just need to nail down the other three girls.
Yes, there you go.
I guess I could have chosen a little different
word. Yes, you could have probably chosen better words for
Sorry
that.
Sorry about that.
I'm just going to gloss over that and go to the next category.
Book them.
Actress in a featured supporting role in a dramatic program or series. Shailen Pierre Dixon for Between, Michelle Nolden for Saving Hope, Wendy Crewson for Slasher, Lauren Lee Smith for This Life, and Lara Jean Chorostecki, I think.
Yeah, I think so.
X Company.
Yeah.
Best performance by an actress in a feature supporting role or guest role in a comedic series. Kathleen Phillips, Mr. D. Naomi Sneakus for Mr. D.
Sneakus, yep.
Sneakus, there you go. Emily Hampshire, Schitt's Creek. Mary Walsh, Sensitive Skin. And Lane McNeil for You, Me, Her.
Yeah, now You, Me, Her. This is sticking in my craw a little bit because this is actually an American show that HBO Canada has picked up for broadcast. Clearly, they film it in Vancouver, so clearly there's something going on there that they're doing enough of it to be nominated for a Canadian Screen Award.
They've met the criteria.
Yeah, but it must be the flimsiest of criteria because, you know, even though Bell Media was promoting this as a CTV original, it's not an original. It's an acquired, it's an acquisition. So just want to throw that out there.
Just throw that out there.
I'm not saying Lane McNeil's not worthy of a nomination. I'm just saying.
Let's skip down a little bit. I'm just trying to see. We've got best performance in a variety or sketch comedy program or series by individual or ensemble.
Mm-hmm.
So we have the ensemble that does the Baroness von Sketch Show. Alicia Cara for the Juno Awards.
I think she sang.
Yeah.
She's a singer. Okay.
Yeah, I think so. White Horse for the Juno Awards, which is a band.
Yep.
The crew from This Hour is 22 Minutes, and The Tragically Hip for their concert.
All right. There you go.
Okay, I guess.
Hmm.
I don't know. Best performance in an animated program or series, Martin Short for The Cat in the Hat Knows a Lot About Camping. Sarah Chaudhry for The Curse of Clara, A Holiday Tale. Devin Cohen for Daniel Tiger's Neighborhood. Joe Cobden for Knuckleheads, and Dwayne Hill for Peg and Cat.
Perfect.
Let's see if we have... I'm skipping through. The last few are sports, and while I certainly don't mean to dismiss them, they're sports announcer categories, where, you know, as much as I would say that there is a perfect art and craft to sports announcing, so much of it has to do with whether your team's any good or not.
Yeah. No, you're absolutely right. Yeah.
You know, you can make a bad team sound a little bit better, but you certainly sound a lot... You sound a lot better if your team is better, I think.
Exactly.
So there you go, folks. We've kind of run the gamut of many of the remaining categories. There are, of course, a whole bunch of categories that we didn't mention would have to do with some of the technical stuff.
Mm-hmm.
Go to the link on the website. Go to the link, and Greg can put it up again within the podcast post itself, the episode post itself.
Yep.
And if you want to see everything there, we certainly congratulate all of the nominees, all 56 pages of them.
Crazy. And just a reminder that the Canadian Screen Awards, they'll be awarded next month, so March on CBC.
For the entire month of March.
Entire month of March, yes. And I'll be down there. It ends up being a 3 or 4 night thing. So and I will be down there for all of them reporting, and maybe I can snag some red carpet interviews with folks as well. But that's the plan anyway.
So before we head out, we are recording today on Sunday, which is an inauspicious Sunday in that it is Super Bowl Sunday. And being Super Bowl Sunday, I noticed a bunch of the you know, on Sunday mornings they always have the political panel shows in Canada.
Yes.
And they do in the States too, but we have quite a few here in Canada. And like, you know, Question Period, the West Bloc, whatever the heck else it is. That's not one of them, by the way, whatever the hell else it is. one of them, at least this morning, I was flipping past, was talking about the fact that, oh, this year, for the first year, the CRTC has said that there is no simultaneous substitution for the Super Bowl. And so Diane and I have been talking about SimSub for years on this podcast, and how one of the greatest things we think that you could do for Canadian television is to get rid of it completely, because it would actually force Canadian networks to maybe be creative with some of their shows and actually come up with some more of their own shows, mm-hmm. because they could actually. So I don't know if you've weighed in on this anytime lately, Greg, but it might be time for another little quick note to remind people about what's going on here.
So basically what the CRTC did was they asked, I don't know whether they asked. No, I
this
don't
is
even.
Part of their, this is part of their big thing they did about a year and a half.
Yeah, Let's Talk TV. So out of the, and I believe it was 100 or so suggestions from people across Canada, the CRTC has decided that the Canadian network broadcasting the Super Bowl, and in this case it's been CTV or Bell Media for the last several years, it was no longer allowed to substitute Canadian commercials for the American ones. It's called simultaneous substitution, or SimSub is the short form. And so for the first time this year, Canadians will be seeing American ads instead of Canadian ads. Bell Media has lobbied against this. We talked about it a few weeks ago. There was even a U.S.
Marco Rubio.
Marco Rubio was saying that this would be bad. Bell Media announced earlier this week that they were letting some on-air people in television and radio go, and they acknowledged that part of the reason was because of the advertising losses that they weren't getting, because, of course, the Super Bowl is the biggest night when it comes to advertising. So without those Canadian advertising dollars, they're not making the money that they usually do off of it.
Here's the thing as well. And
sure.
So there's one part where Bell CTV got disadvantaged here, in that they bid on this Super Bowl before the regulation came down.
Yeah. They've had it locked in for a few years.
And so they probably bid a crap load on this Super Bowl.
Yep.
And now they find out that they're not going to make the money on the advertising. So that's fair ball for complaining. Mm-hmm. I get that. Mm-hmm. And the reason why Marco Rubio and people in the States are pissed off is because the NFL is lobbying their own politicians to say, we can't sell the Super Bowl to Canada for as much as we used to anymore, because
right.
they can't make the advertising
right,
off.
Right, right.
So this is one of those things where I don't mind it staying the way it is. In fact, I'm fully supportive of the idea of getting rid of SimSub altogether. This is one of those things where next year, if it's up for bid again, or if they haven't done the bid process yet, it just means that the money that they're losing this year, they shouldn't be losing as much next year, because they shouldn't be paying as much for the Super Bowl next year.
Yeah. And, my thing is that, to me, and this is just me, the Super Bowl ads were never that big of a deal to me anyway. And increasingly, you're able to see the ads before they are even broadcast on the Super Bowl. I mean, these advertisers are posting them online days in advance. So if you really want to see the ads, you can see them online. So I really don't, for me, I don't understand why this ended up being an issue in the first place and why this decision was made. It feels as though maybe 5 or 10 years ago, this would have been something worthy of making a decision about, but not now when you have so much access to everything online nowadays. It just seems weird to me.
So, I mean, and it seems weird that this is the sole, I get that people have been complaining about this for years.
Yeah.
But for the CRTC to cherry pick this one event,
yeah.
which isn't even a Canadian event,
no,
it just seems really weird to me.
It is. It's really strange.
Anyway,
in other news, JP Blais, his gig at the CRTC is coming up, so the CRTC is looking for people that are interested can put their names in a hat and could be the next head of the CRTC. So if you think you can do a better job than JP, then hey, Anthony, maybe you should do it.
I think we should have a crowdsourced campaign for everybody to put my name in as
okay.
the next head of the CRTC.
Okay.
I think so. I think I'm up to the task.
Yeah.
I think I've got a lot of experience helping with this podcast over the past 5 years. I'm probably one of the few people who can remember the last three CRTC heads.
Yeah.
Before JP Blais, we of course had Smelly Cats.
What?
Yes, his last name was Cats.
Oh,
and so I remember on the podcast we once called him Smelly Cats, because reference back to Friends.
Sure,
remember the song Smelly Cats. And then before that, we had the Conrad von Finkenstein.
That's right. Yeah.
Yes. So so there's very few people that can do that can remember the past three CRTC hits. So, I mean, the fact that I can do that, I think, qualifies me for the job.
I think you're right.
Yeah. It was Leonard Smelly Cats, by the way. Just to let you know. Greg, where can people find you when you're not here once every couple of weeks talking about Canadian television?
You can find me running the show over at TVA, tv-eh.com, the website. Also, the Twitter account, @TV_EH. I also have my own personal Twitter account, @Greg_David. You can find all the other links to social media for TVA on the TVA website. We've got links to Instagram and YouTube and Facebook on there as well. And I don't know, this isn't Canadian TV that I'm doing, but I've just joined Anthony Marco and Dave Broadbeck over at the Best Episode Ever podcast, at Best Episode Ever?
BestEpisodeEver.
Okay, .com. And we talk about, we each pick a television show, a US, usually a U.S. television show, and just talk about, what's the year? It's the
1980, it's a show that has to have started no later than 1989.
Okay, so there you go. And so I just recorded the first one with the guys just over a week ago.
And you chose a Canadian show?
I did. I just happened to choose a Canadian show called Circus. So anybody that grew up in the 80s that remembers Circus, check out that podcast. I've been having a lot of fun with the guys.
There you go. You can find all of the other podcasts that I do at anthonymarco.com. You can find me on Twitter at Anthony Marco. And you can find that aforementioned other podcast, Best Episode Ever, on Twitter if you want to, at Best Ep Ever. That's where you got those two names confused, by the way.
There we go. Thank you.
Yeah. So find all of us. Feel free to get in touch. Feel free to comment on the podcast link. If you listen to this via the web, if you have a podcast aggregator, feel free to get in touch in any way that you choose. Let us know what you think. If there's something you want us to talk about, let us know. Maybe we will.
Yeah.
Who knows? We are also susceptible to bribes by liquor people.
We are. Mm-hmm. Do you hear that, Bell City Brewing Company?
Yeah. Do you hear that? Once, put it this way, if there's a Cookie Crisp beer coming out soon, I want to be on the list. That's all I'm saying. That wraps up another episode for this week. And now back to your regularly scheduled programming.